and welcome to Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo. I'm Ryan Bickle. On today's show, we have Dr. Greg Rasmussen from the Painted Dog Research Trust with us, and he has a fascinating story to tell about the painted dogs. And also sitting in for Jesse Lowry today is Nikki the intern. Hi, Nikki.
Hello.
Hi.
Okay, so let's get started. Tell us about your background, Dr. Greg.
Okay, well, I was born in England, but I had the lucky childhood of my parents emigrated when I was like 8 or 9 years old, and they went to Africa, and they went to Zimbabwe, and of course, to me, it was like dying and going to heaven, because there was all these wildlife animals all over the place. We weren't in a city, we were in a rural area, and there were snakes and lizards running down the wall, and it was just heaven to grow up in an environment like that. And I suppose I always liked wildlife as a child, and I read every book. And in fact, I remember one of the teachers said, "Well, what books have you read?" And I just went, "Dr. Doolittle, this and that, and you name it." Everyone was animal, and she said, "Don't you read anything else?" I said, "No. Is there anything else to read?" So from a early childhood, I was fascinated by wildlife, and somehow, what is crazy, I never even thought I was going to make it my whole career, which is what I have. I've made it my life's work is conservation. And I used to help at the museum, and I don't know if we've got time for a short story, but I wanted to break down the door of the museum. I wanted to get in with this curator, and I thought, well, how does an 11-year-old, get to know this big curator in my eyes was enormous? And I thought, well, if I catch this and get a snake that dies, and I know museum curators, they're always interested in snakes, and I got this snake, long story short, I packed it up in formaldehyde, wrapped it up in a plastic bag and sellotaped it up and put it in an envelope and posted it to him. What I didn't know was that when he got it, and he was amazing because it was apparently a very unique specimen of a snake. But what he didn't tell me was that it had stunk out the whole mailbag. Of course, it had leaked. And the whole post pack was everyone's love letters and greeting cards and mail was completely contaminated. Anyway, I got noticed. But, and I think he figured I was at least trying. And so I grew up working with snakes, actually, and lizards. And then I had a brief period where I did an engineering-type degree course with the British Merchant Navy. And then I went back to Africa, and I realized that my life was to work with animals and wildlife, and I didn't care what capacity. And I then went back to grad school, and I did 2 bachelor's degrees, one in zoology and another one in botany, because I was just hooked. And in the middle of that, I got involved working to help out for 6 months with painted dogs. And 30 years later, I'm still wearing the dog hat, the original project that I worked with. It was only there for a couple of years more, and they folded funding, trying to find funding is really hard. And but I was hooked. Those dogs have got right under my skin. They're amazing critters.
You know what? It's great to hear your story. We've done 41 of these podcasts now, and every person we bring in and have sit in your chair, we ask, how do you get started in this? And it's always been at a young age. They were playing outside, playing in the backyard, had a wild area, a woods behind their house. Yeah. Some way that they could be connected to nature got them interested in a young age and produced a real interest for saving animals, conservation, and the like. And so that's just another great story to hear happened.
It's so important. And I almost see it as a duty of care and payback, to work with kids today, to give them that opportunity to touch nature, to feel nature, to sense nature. And, it may not rub off on every child, but there are some, you can see it in their eyes, it absolutely like, oh my God, this is just me, And some of my grad students the same, my idea is to share with my young graduate students in Africa the world of conservation, share with them the bush, and they get absolutely hooked on one little facet. I mean, one of my grad students now, he's passionate about parasites. That's what floats his boat, you know, and I love it, you know. And that is it about nature. It's endless. It's like a book. And I always say that nature to me is like a book that never ends. And every time you turn another page, you never get to the end because you just keep turning pages. And it's amazing. There's no end career, end of game as you know, in nature, because it's too amazing and too fascinating.
Painted Dogs.
Ah.
Tell us about Painted Dogs.
Painted Dogs. You know, what captured me, I think, you know, because I say it was only meant for 6 months and I was only going to help for 6 months voluntarily. I think I've done more voluntary life in my world, but I'm the happiest man. You know, I'm as happy as Larry doing it. And I started work with my very first pack. And I had this, and I started to be interested in their social system because they've got this wonderful system where there's no fighting, no aggression, and they all work. Their teamwork is impeccable. You know, they definitely be the Super Bowl winners every year. You know, if it was against other species. And I had this incident where I had a pack of dogs got into an interaction with lions, and of course lions are a lot bigger than a painted dog. And one of the pups, actually, a 10-month-old pup, because the pack will do anything to defend their own. You know, they're fighting over dinner. They'll say, well, you know, have the food. You know, we can get another one, but we can't replace a pup. And they're fearless, and they went to do battle to protect the pack, and they came out with one yearling. Well, this 10-month-old dog, Olner, had got mauled by a lion so badly. And I got a vet who looked at it rather kind of and said, well, there's nothing I can do, and this dog can't even lift its head, and I don't know why you called me attitude. And I came back the next day, and the dog was gone, and I assumed he died in the night. And the pack wanted to say, clearly didn't agree with the vet, and they went for a second opinion. They dragged that dog away. They cleaned and licked his wounds for 3 months and fed him for 3 months. Now, here, well, it wasn't like it was, you know, your alpha, or it was just another member of their pack that was so precious to them. And then I realized later that this wasn't a one-off event. They look after their sick. They look after their old. They never fight. They've got a social system that's so incredible. And that's what captured me. You know, the pups feed first. And I'm looking at this saying, oh, my God. And here was a species, of course, that was, like the wolf, totally persecuted for no good reason. I remember thinking maybe I had the skill sets, hopefully, to make a difference. And I also remember thinking, well, here's me. I grew up in this country. Here is a species that's going extinct right in front of my nose. We've only got 3,000 to 6,000 left in the world. And today, in Zimbabwe then, there were 200 dogs. In the whole country, and they were being shot by ranchers, and they were going out. And I remember clearly then that thinking we got to do something about it. So then I went in, as they say, to do battle with the ranchers, and I worked with ranchers. I worked with them positively and negatively, i.e., you know, trying the carrot and the stick. You know, either way was going to, whichever way. But we stopped that. You know, it took 14 years, but we stopped the rancher shooting the dogs. That's the only country, to my knowledge, that has ever happened. But that also came, you know, because they were, well, why are you killing the dogs? Oh, because they're killing all, they'll kill all our cows. And I said, well, they will kill or they are killing. Oh, no, they kill cows. And so I said, okay. And you know, I went in to do a study. You know, as a scientist, I like talk from a position of knowledge. And I went into the ranch land, and I brokered a deal with the ranchers and said, okay, I said, give me 3 years to study these dogs. I said, and if, after 3 years, I said, I will move those dogs, whatever it takes. Even if they haven't killed one cow, I said, I will move the pack because you clearly don't like them here. At that point, I had no idea how to catch a pack of dogs, but I couldn't say that. And I found out that the dogs were responsible for 1.7% of the ranchers' losses. And interestingly, and perhaps no, not surprisingly, 17% 10 times more stock was killed by plastic bags and rubbish on the range. You know, wow. Cows swallowing plastic bags, and one silly cow swallowed a shoe and died. And I said, used to say to the ranchers, well, maybe you should go and shoot plastic bags. You'll do far better. the whole thing was that the dogs were just again vilified as ruthless cattle killers. They weren't. And, you know, and even if they were, there always is something called stock management, you know. I mean, you know, the fact of the matter is if I've got something that's really valuable to me, if you value your car, well, hey, lock it up.
Yeah.
You know, if you've got a cow on the ranch and it's worth $1,000, well, don't just leave it lying around for someone to pick up cattle rustler could eat. So, but the dogs themselves, it was clearly their three musketeer type attitude, the way they cared for their pups. Pups came first. And just they were so organized. You know, they have this amazing no-fighting situation. The packs never fight. Individuals never fight within the pack. It is so rare as to be a non-event. And, they blew me away as a species.
Tell us, for our listeners who don't know, the differences between, maybe the dog they have at home and painted dogs.
Yeah, that's a good question. It'd be nice to know what I'm talking about. Painted dogs are a unique species that's not close relative of wolves, jackals, hyenas. They're a unique species that's evolved about 6 million years ago. But to look at, they're about the size of a German Shepherd. And they've got quite a very strong head that's quite short in the skull, so not quite like a Mastiff, but, you know, that kind of short, stocky head. And enormous ears. You know, painted dogs have got these big ears. Mickey Mouse has got nothing on painted dogs. They've got these great big ears that they use for part, obviously for hearing, but also serves to help cooling when they're running. So they're very different. Their dentition is different. They've got a different cutting tooth, so they can actually cut bone, whereas a dog will obviously chew bone and crush it up. Painted dogs can actually cut it like a pair of bone scissors. They've got a special jaw there. They've got a much bigger brain case volume than domestic dogs or wolves, which of course ties in with the fact that they've got this incredible social system. And the social system comes with the language. And painted dogs have got the most extensive language, of which, of course, we only know a fingernail's worth, if you know what I mean. They've got a whole series of calls. They've got a long-range call, which is called the Who Call, which is sort of like a and that's when one's in distress. And just a little fun story here to go with that was that in the early days, I used to try and play that call to see if I could bring other dogs in. And then I found out it didn't work. So I looked like an ice cream van playing this stupid jingle all over the bush. But one of my students did her master's, her doctorate, sorry, on the Who Call, and found out that each individual on his Who Call or at the end was his signature, just like we sign a letter. So right at the end, the last bit was a ooh, and the last bit ooh wasn't distress. That was, my name is Greg, or my name is whoever. And they were able to work at that level, so an individual level. And then obviously they've got body language, but then they've got the most extensive range of high-pitched chitters and twitters. And we're actually aware that in the vocal range of painted dogs, that there is ultrasound. We're not quite sure how high it gets, but there is sound coming out of their mouths that's beyond our hearing. So that probably means that we're only picking up half the story. And they're fascinating to me. They've got obviously the only thing, they're called painted because no two are the same. They're basically three colors, black, white, and gold. And no two are the same. Every single one's got a unique coat pattern. It's like its own fingerprint, which is perfect for us as biologists because you get to know them so quickly.
You can identify.
You can identify every single individual, which makes the study really neat. And they probably obviously identify each other. And the only thing that they have in common is a white tip on their tail. the white at the end of their tail is white, which is probably what's the signaling of some, you know, they'll use it in defense, so they'll all be going like with their flags forward when they're trying to deal with other predators like lions and hyenas. Currently, they're major threats in the wild, obviously, because they are endangered. As I say, there's 3,000 to 6,000 left in the world in the wild. They only occur in Africa. And historically, they were right throughout sub-Saharan Africa and we're now very limited in what we've got left, mostly in southern Africa. Their main current threats today are threefold. One are snares, poachers are setting snares, not for the dogs. So in the same way, you know, that fish nets catch non-target species and dolphins get caught in mackerel nets, painted dogs are caught in snares. Why are snares set for bushmeat? And the bushmeat trade is one of our poaching, and the bushmeat trade is an absolute scourge for all wildlife. And we're obviously, we try to combat that in our way by assisting anti-poaching units. But in the case, the specific case of the dogs, over the last 5 years, we've been developing a collar that protects the painted dogs against the snares. So if the dogs are caught and they're wearing that collar, they can break the wire and go free without any injury. And that's taken a lot of time, a lot of effort. We're using domestic dogs to run through snares to say, did design A work? Design A doesn't work as well. Design B, and we ended up with 5 or 6 designs. And finally, we came up with a collar that we just fielded last year that we can build ourselves in Zimbabwe for about $350 that protects a painted dog against the snare. And it's like over 90% effective. So we're pretty excited about that.
I love those stories where you can develop something and it makes a lot of sense, but probably no one has ever thought of doing that before to defeat these low-tech ways of poaching.
So that's the one major threat. And then the other one is cars, of course, people driving too fast. And last year, again, we had huge mortality, and I finally said, that's enough. You know, sometimes you get to the point, you're like, well, I've talked about it for long enough, you know, and I've thought about it for long enough, and so now we're going on a huge road campaign. And again, this is where teams are going to, you know, come in, where, you know, we're going to have to put cameras out there to first of all find out, you know, what traffic we're dealing with. And these are just either they're truck drivers, we've got tour operators, right? Just everyone's always driving too fast. And, you know, and people have got to slow down, not only for wildlife, but for themselves. Uh-huh. And, you know, packs of dogs get wiped out. But even worse, what happens is that like, if an alpha male or an alpha female or both of them gets killed, that's the end of the pack. You know, it's just, you might just as well cut their legs off from a pack. Because we don't say, you know, a painted dog is not an individual, it's a pack. That's the unit of a painted dog. And so we're going to start a huge road campaign, traffic awareness campaign, and I actually want to get some of these cameras, you know, out there, the ones that actually show people what speed they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that in itself can help to work, and obviously some posters and fly. And this is where, you know, where we, and obviously working on a project in Africa, need help from people here. You know, I'm not a marketer, you know. I don't know what's the right kind of messaging that should be on the billboards or on the flyers, you know. I don't know the best means of delivering marketing messages. We're not graphic designers. But, you know, this is where those skills are in the first world. And this is where people from the first world can help us with graphic design, help us with marketing ideas. You know, maybe someone can go and research what speed cameras do we need, you know, so we don't waste, you know, I don't spend $500 on something that's, as we say, is a white elephant that doesn't work properly. Mm-hmm. And then the third major problem, so we've got cars, we've got snares, and the third major problem, which is really widespread, are tour operators taking clients, tourists to the dens of painted dogs, and they're causing absolute havoc, and it's right across southern Africa. It's just to take pictures. And the dogs are, the pups are not getting fed properly. Because obviously, you know, when they when they come to the den, the animals are a bit disturbed and they back off and they aren't exhibiting that. And now those pups, painted dog pups, have to grow really fast. And by 12 weeks, they leave the den and they're out of there. And by 12 weeks, obviously at 12 weeks, you can't do 5 to 10 miles a day, which is what they have to do when they're 12, unless you've got long legs. No surprises there. And they're evolutionarily designed for rapid growth. Those pups start off eating, you know, like half a pound of meat a day, which you may think you're giving, you'd give your own young pup if he's a bulldog. Then they go up to a pound. And then as they get older, right coming up to 12 weeks, they get to a point where they can eat 5 to 10 pounds of meat per pup per day.
That's incredible.
It's obscene. But they don't think it is. And literally, you know, the adults fill them up and they've got these very high metabolisms. They're like these seabirds. They've got a window. You know, the Arctic weather's coming, you know. We've got to get in there. And they got to get them out of the den and get them nomadic again, which is really important. And the pups, 2 hours later, having eaten a full meal, you know, like a pound and a half of meat. Oh, I'm hungry. And it's all been metabolized into growth, into this rapid growth. So between, and so what happens is, the scary thing is that at the dens they're disturbed, the pups lose 2 hours feeding a day on average. So they're not getting fed so much. And what it means is that their legs don't grow properly. And, you know, like we all know, we've got growth spurts, growth stages in life. You know, we don't, if as humans, we don't get food at a certain time of our life, something will be compromised. Well, in painted dogs, if you don't get food, a lot of food in your first 12 weeks of life, almost ad libitum, you end up with short legs. Well, as adults, not only as a pup, but as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what does that do to a population that's a top hunter, that's your top athlete?
It's a huge disadvantage.
It's enormous disadvantage, yeah. And so that's the, and that's where the, we're just finalizing the science. We've got all the data. We've analyzed, you know, something like 30,000 camera trap photographs. We've taken measurements of leg lengths using photographically, and obviously we're not catching all the dogs and out there with a tape measure. Everything's non-invasive. And we've now got to the point where we've got to present all these data to, you know, to governments and obviously to science, and hopefully then once the facts are there, the rest will follow. The solution will follow.
Some of this research you've done has helped zoos and painted dogs in captive populations as well.
Yes. Well, actually, so interestingly, when I first started to come to visit zoos globally, I sort of noticed globally that all the zoos, all the dogs had short legs. And I was thinking, why? You know, I was thinking, well, is it genetic or is it feeding? You know, it's all either nature or nurture. And I got the European zoo population. They did the first genetic study of all the dogs in captivity in Europe, and that's now being replicated in the States. That's all being done, which is fantastic. And we found out that genetically the population was pretty good in Europe. So I said, well, we can probably throw that out. And then we started changing the diet of all the dogs in Europe and putting them on this ad lib, very high carb, calorie diet. You know what I mean? Loaded with protein and oil and all the energy packed in there. We started to see that all the dogs in captivity now grow proper long legs, the way they should look in the wild. And then they move, that's been transferred to packs in the States. And even where, and they you know, some of the zoos did their own study on some of their dogs and said, well, that pair was fed that, their pups were fed that, the same pair fed on, the pups fed on a different diet, looked differently. And so sure enough, we've propped it up. But that's where I got the idea from, by working with captive facilities. You know, we are all one big team here. You know, that's the whole way that conservation works, is when we all work together, when we all work like a pack of painted dogs. And instead of working for our own personal good, we work as a team, and our common good is called, it's the magic word, conservation, that we're all so passionate about.
tell us about the Painted Dog Research Trust and some of the programs that you have going on.
So Painted Dog Research Trust, obviously, we're constantly researching the dog, but we... one of my missions at Painted Dog Research Trust, in the last 4 years, we've started to move towards developing a facility where we can do training at all levels. So we've finished building accommodation for up to 40 students. They could be graduate students. They could be rangers in training. They could be children coming in from the cities to learn about conservation. And my mission is to provide the climate for conservation within the local population. So kids programs, kids coming into the bush, kids learning about nature, trees, getting them excited as kids about, like as I did. And some of those kids will turn out, it will float their boat, And in fact, I've got one of my now master's students, she's just finishing off her master's, and she said, and when she finally came to join me when she was about 22 years old, and she said, "Do you remember me?" And I said, "No, I don't remember you, Cynthia." And she said, "No, I remember you." She said, "You came into my classroom, when I was 9 years old, wearing your dog suit." And she said, from that day on, I was going to be a biologist. And I'm like, wow.
That's amazing.
It was fantastic. Yeah. And she's now finishing her master's. And I also want to inspire young wannabe biologists. I'm interested in this stuff, and I want to get them out there, get them into the field, let them realize that this book that they're about to open is endless and it's never going to end, and how fascinating it is. But equally, how the book is so fragile that at any moment someone could torch the lot and burn it. Mm-hmm. And so my mission is all about training. We're also running courses, just going to start running courses for rangers to do ranger training, so that rangers out there in the field, not only are they looking for poachers, but they're also more immersed in it. They might see, and we had a workshop saying, "What do you guys want to know?" And they were everything. Well, we want to know about snakes. We want to know about bees. We want to know how to swim even, all sorts of odd things came out on the table. And most importantly, they all wanted to know about ecology, because it's not part of, want to see, understand all those connections. Because ultimately, Painted Dog Research Trust, if we can, inspire not just the team, my own little home team, but if we can have teams that will train teams, that multiplier effect, and get it out there and get kids inspired, get rangers, and also tomorrow's conservation leaders. That to me is really important. Mm-hmm. We have to have tomorrow, and that's going to come from my graduate body that goes through, as I say, the Muddy Boots Brigade, that love to get out there. Well, we don't have mud in Africa. Mostly what we have is sand, and we all roll around in the sand, and we're as happy as clams.
Well, that sounds great. If people want to learn more about you and your organization, do you have a website or some way to contact you?
Yeah, we do. We have a website. It's painteddogresearchtrust.org.
And that's all the time we have today. If you want to learn more about Blank Park Zoo, head over to our website, blankparkzoo.com. And we'll see you next time on Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo.